tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
How you're playing, how you live this life, what you expect from them. And then when someone hurts you, you've got to take care of that pain before the sun goes down. If you don't, you allow the spiritual enemy, the devil, to grab a foothold and to turn a molehill into a mountain. Last week was the second week in the series, and we discussed how you need to manage your anger by replacing judgment with questions. The truth of the matter is we all are judgmental. We see something and we make a judgment about it. And in relationships, the reason that's an issue is because you don't always judge correctly. Sometimes the judgment that you make about why someone did something is wrong. And before you allow there to be a separation in your relationship, or before you come to the conclusion that they did it on purpose, that they meant to hurt you, that they're so whatever, fill in the blank, you've got to ask some questions. Some questions about motive, about questions about why they did it, and you've got to figure out for them, because there's a chance that maybe they didn't mean to hurt you. Maybe it was something on your end that you received it, and you could settle it simply if you asked some questions of why. Well, today I want to talk about an area in our relationships that I think is incredibly difficult to manage, especially when it comes to our anger and our frustrations. And we're going to talk about something that I think is a brilliant point that a guy by the name of Paul brings up. Paul is a major player in the New Testament part of the Bible. And for Christians, we talk a lot about Paul because he wrote over half of the New Testament. And he was a missionary that went around telling people who did not have any background with God about Jesus. And he wrote some incredible letters. And we're going to read a portion of one of his letters that has such great insight for how you and I can deal with conflict when we get angry in relationships. Our text for the day, we're going to read just a portion of it. I'm going to explain more than what we're going to read, but the part that I want us to focus on, we're going to show some honor to it by standing to our feet, and we're going to read it out loud. So if you would just humor me and stand to your feet, we're going to read out loud 2 Corinthians 10, 3 through 5, which says, "For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ." Now that we've read the text, let's engage with God and ask Him to speak to our hearts. If you're new to the church scene, if you don't know how to pray, we're not going to ask you to pray out loud. This is just something that you pray inside your soul. And if you don't know what to pray, I pray a simple prayer that just says, "God, would you speak to my heart? And would you give me the courage to do whatever you tell me to do?" Would you spend a few moments praying to God? God, we just come before you today and we just admit that some of us were so preoccupied with our situations and ourselves that this is the first time we've even prayed all week. And God, we just admit that even right now, our minds are so distracted. We've got things to do. Some of us have sickness in our family or we're not feeling well ourselves. Some of us have issues, major life things going on. And God, we just ask right now that you would just quiet our minds and that you'd still our hearts so that we could hear clearly from you. We ask you to remove distractions from this room and distractions from our minds and our hearts, and that you would speak to us in a personal way. And God, I ask that you would just give us the courage to obey whatever you tell us to do. God, I ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. You ever notice how many people say they are afraid of confrontation? Like, I don't know that many people who say, "I love confrontation." I know some people who are less afraid of it than others, but I don't know anyone that is like, "In every area of my life, I love confrontation. Bring it on, I'm looking for a fight," in every relationship. If that is you, I would say, there's something wrong with you, and I will pray for you. Like, there are some relationships in your life where you may not mind confronting. Maybe it's because you're the boss and you feel like you have the power, or maybe it's with your kids, or maybe it's with a spouse, but there is some area in your life where you start to kind of feel a little bit afraid of confrontation, that someone hurts you and your first instinct is, "I don't know if I want to talk to them about that." And maybe it's because you're afraid they're going to overreact, or maybe it's because you've had a bad experience with confrontation in the past, but there is some relationship in your life that there are some areas, there's some issues of concern that you know you need to address, but you're afraid to because of the confrontation. The definition of confrontation is simply this: a situation in which people groups, etc., fight, oppose, or challenge each other in an angry way. So a confrontation, just by the very definition, means that something is wrong and you are angry. You don't have happy confrontations. It's not like someone gave you a gift and then you said, "Oh, I need to sit them down to confront them about how thankful I am for this gift." Confrontations come because you are angry, you are upset. There's something inside of your mind that says, "That was wrong. I can't believe they did that. I would never do that. They've hurt me. I feel offended." And oftentimes, when it's time to confront someone, we become afraid because we build up the situation and we make it so much worse than what it actually would be. And I don't know, maybe you're like me in that when I have to confront someone, I go through this whole scenario in my mind and I think, okay, if I sit down and I talk to them about that, then they're going to get like mad, and then they're going to start yelling at me, and then they're going to leave, and I'm not going to be friends with them anymore, and then they're going to write a bad review about my book on Amazon, and then like, and I just like go through all these scenarios and I make it into this like really, really big deal. And it's like, if I would just deal with the little issue, I would find that, yeah, it might be some tension, yeah, it might be a little bit difficult, but it's not nearly as big as what I've made it out in my mind. It's kind of like this. This past Sunday, my wife and I were sitting on the couch watching TV. We'd put the kids to bed. And as we're watching TV, my wife says, "Did you hear that?" And I said, "No, I didn't hear anything." And she said, I heard something." I said, "No, I didn't hear anything. Let's just keep watching the show." And a few moments later, she said, did you hear that?" And I said, "No, I have no idea what you're talking about." And a few minutes later, she said, hit mute on the TV because there is something crawling around in our ceiling." And so I hit mute and I listened for a little bit and I kind of thought I heard something, but it wasn't to the degree that she was making it out to be. And so I said, it's no big deal. It's probably the wind. It's nothing to worry about." Well, she then says, "Rob, I don't think that's coming from our attic or from our roof. I think there is a creature in our vent, in our air vent that, you know, like you pull it down and there's like an air vent in there and you replace it every like 3 months." She says, "I think there's a creature in there." And I said, "Surely there's no creature in there. It's just probably the wind. It's just probably something is going on. Let's not worry about it." So we go to bed a little while later. And at about 2 a.m. in the morning, I wake up and I'm wide awake. And I need to fall back asleep. And for me, the way that puts me to sleep instantly is if I watch some TV. So I leave our bedroom, I go back into the TV room, and I turn on the TV. I turn the volume down really, really low so I don't wake anyone else up. And I know in just a matter of moments, I'm going to fall asleep watching TV. Well, as I'm laying there, my eyes start to get heavy, and then I hear the creature in the vent. And I try to ignore it because I really want to go to sleep, and I'm almost about to fall asleep. But then I just start to have these fears that if I fall asleep, I'm going to wake up, and there's going to be like creatures all over me, just like everywhere. And so I tell myself, I've got to deal with this issue. I can't ignore it. I can't wait till the morning. I've got to deal with this now. And so I go and I get a little step ladder, and I know there's a creature in there, and I don't know exactly how I'm going to handle it, but I know I need something, some type of weapon of mass destruction. And so I get a bag, and I get a hammer. And I didn't think this through. I didn't have a plan. I just knew I needed something in case the creature started to fall on me. So I stand up on the ladder and I start to unscrew the vent. And at this point, the creatures start scurrying around up there. And it's loud and it sounds like a lot of creatures. And in my mind, I tell myself that this is a family of mice, maybe even rats. They sound really huge. And it's not just a mom and dad and a couple kids. It's the uncle and the aunt and the cousins and like the whole family's up there. And the noise is so loud. I am at this point, like, literally scared, and I've been standing on this stool. It is now 3 a.m., and I've been standing there for a long time just looking up and saying, I don't know how to deal with this. Like, I'm scared. But I finally just said, I've got to do something. I've got to take care of the issue. And so I unscrewed the vent, and I knew as soon as I pulled down the air, whatever that thing is called, as soon as I pulled that down, I just knew that mice were going to rain down on my head and just pour over me. And so very sheepishly, I pulled it down slowly over the bag with the hammer in my hand, and there was nothing. And I looked up, and there was nothing. There were no creatures. There was no animals. And I was like, what in the world was that noise? Well, I turned the vent over, and on the other side of the vent was a cockroach about that big. Now, I know for some of you, that's enough to sell the house. You would burn it down. Like, one cockroach, you're getting firearms, you're shooting shotguns in the ceiling. Like, I know for some of you, that's a really, really big deal. And I'm not a fan of cockroaches, but compared to what I made it up in my mind, one little roach was not as big of a deal as having mice rain down on me. And I took care of the roach. Like, the hammer just took care of business and he was done. So many of us, when it comes to confrontation, we are the exact same way. That there is a problem that you can't put off. You can't ignore it. Like, it's just going to get worse. And so you've got to do something about it. But as you're trying to deal with it, as you're trying to deal with the confrontation, you build it up into something way bigger than what it is. Is it kind of scary? Yes. Is there something you got to deal with? Yes. But if you would just deal with it in the infant stages of it, you would find that it's not nearly as big of a deal as what you make it out to be. So many of us are so afraid of confrontation. In fact, so many of us are so afraid of confrontation that when we get angry, we go and we talk to everyone else about the problem except for the person that can actually do anything about it. The problem with anger is that anger is never content until it's expressed. Anger is never content until it's expressed. What does that mean? That means that when you get angry, that anger is not going to go away until you express it to someone. And because we're afraid of confrontation, oftentimes we express it to the wrong people. Some of you, you post it on Facebook. Facebook world has nothing to do with your drama, but you're just posting it on there, very passive-aggressively, for everyone to wonder, what is going on? You know who you are. If you don't, ask your friends. They'll tell you, because they talk behind your back about you. Or if we don't post on Facebook, then instead of dealing with the issue with our spouse, we go to our mom or to our dad or to our sister or brother. Or if it's a work issue and you're dealing with some confrontation, some anger with people that you work with, instead of going to them and saying, hey, we need to talk about this, you go to everyone but them. You talk about your boss, you don't talk to your boss. You talk about the other staff members, you don't talk to the staff member. And so anger, it has to be expressed. It will come out somewhere. And if you're not careful, what you will do is you express your anger to the wrong people who can't do anything about it. And so as a Christian, you've got to learn, when you feel anger inside of you, you've got to learn to deal with it and the person in a healthy way so that you don't cause a rift in the relationship. Because anger is never content until it's expressed. Our text for today, it is written by a guy by the name of Paul. He's a primetime player in the New Testament. He's incredibly important. And I want to read to us 2 Corinthians 10:1. It's just a few verses before the verse we read together. Paul writes, "By the humility and gentleness of Christ, I appeal to you. I, Paul, who am timid when face to face with you, but bold towards you when away." Well, Paul is writing his second letter to a group of Christians in an area called Corinth. His first letter he wrote because the Christians in Corinth weren't acting very Jesus-like. They were like doing some crazy things that no one would accept in the church world. They were doing things that no one would say, you know, like sometimes in life, there's like some gray areas that like some Christians do and other Christians kind of don't do, but you're like, I don't really know if it's bad or not. These were like black and white issues that no Christian would say, I think that's okay. I think God would approve of this. They were doing some horrendous things inside the church. And because Paul loves this group of Christians, he writes them a letter, and he addresses a lot of the issues, and he does it in love. He calls it out, he tells them what the problem is, but he does it in love. He really loves them. Well, Paul's letter to this group of Christians stirred up a fury of fire. And there were people who got upset, and there were people who got their feelings hurt, and there was a group of people who started calling out Paul. Now, most of the people that Paul wrote to appreciated his letter and knew that he loved him, but there's a small group who were starting to criticize Paul. And specifically, they were beginning to talk maliciously about him. And they were saying things like, Paul's not equipped to be a so-called apostle, which was a big deal in their day and age. An apostle was someone who heard from God and spoke on God's behalf. And they were saying, Paul's not one of those apostles. Paul doesn't really know God. Paul's not as special as some of these other guys. And then they say to them, have you ever noticed how when Paul hangs out with us, he's really timid? And he's weak, and he's not very powerful, and he's not very impressive when he talks. But then he leaves us, and he writes these letters, and they're filled with power. Some of you can relate to this, because on the internet, you are brave because you're not looking at people face to face. But like if you're face to face, you kind of feel timid. There's something about having a distance between you that gives you some courage. And the people are accusing Paul of being really bold in his letters, but being very timid in person. So if you notice in the text, Paul actually puts these words in quotes. He says, "I, Paul, who am timid when face to face with you, but bold toward you when away." So what is Paul doing? Well, Paul is addressing that there is a specific issue. He's not skirting around it. He's not being passive aggressive. He's not pretending that there isn't an issue. There is an issue. And now that he's expressed for 9 chapters how much he loves this group of people, he's got to address the issue. And specifically, he calls it out. There are some people who are saying bad things about me. That's the issue at hand. So Paul then says in 2 Corinthians 10:2, "I beg you that when I come, I may not have to be as bold as I expect to be towards some people who think we live by the standards of the world." So what is Paul saying? Well, Paul's saying that, hey, these guys say that I'm bold when I write letters, but I'm timid in person. Let me just tell you, I'm not timid. In fact, I'm not afraid to be bold. I'm not afraid to come there and call them out and tell them what the issue is. And I, let me just tell you, if I have to, I'll come there and I'll stand toe-to-toe with them and I will address it and I will call it out because what they are doing is wrong. But then he addresses the way that he's going to fight in this confrontation. And I want you to catch the very last part of that verse. He says, "They expect me to come as people who live by the standards of this world." And Paul is setting up that they are throwing out some bombs at me. They're throwing out some ammunition. They're shooting shots at me. And I'm going to come and I'm going to address it. But you need to know that when I address this conflict, it's not the way that they would handle it. I handle things differently. And he's starting to set the stage for how he's going to handle the conflict. Look at what he says in 2 Corinthians 10:3. He says, "For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does." I love that word picture. "For though we live in the world." Translation, you're not going to escape the world. Even if you're a Christian, you don't escape the world. You are born into a broken world. That means that every person that you know is broken. That means that you are broken. And sometimes you are hurt because simply hurt people hurt people. And in every relationship that you get in, at some point in that relationship, you're going to be hurt by them, or you're going to hurt them. And sometimes you're hurt by them simply because of your sensitivity and because of your issues and the things going on inside of your mind. And sometimes people don't even mean to offend you or mean to hurt you, and yet you get offended. Why? Because we're all broken. We all have our issues. We all have our stuff to deal with. So often in relationships, we fall in love with someone, even if it's a friend, and we say, "Oh, I just love everything about them." Or we have a baby, and what do people say all the time when a baby is born? "They are perfect." No, that's a lie from the pit of hell. They're not perfect. They're new. You're excited about a baby because it's new. You're excited about that friendship because it's new. If you just start dating, you're excited about that because it's new. But you spend just a few hours with another human being, they will get on your nerves. Every relationship, you see this, when a guy and girl get together and they're like so in love and they have their honeymoon and everything is great and they say like, "Oh, he is just perfect." But then about 4 hours into the honeymoon, they're like, "He is so annoying." You have a baby and you're like, "Oh, it's perfect." But then around age 2, you say, "Yeah, this perfect being, like I love it so much, but why do I want to strangle it? Like, it's not perfect." Every relationship that you have is broken. Every relationship that you have has some issues. And sometimes the issues in the relationship are you. Sometimes you're too sensitive. Sometimes you're bringing in hurts from your past and you're allowing people to hurt you and they're not even meaning to hurt you. We all have issues. And Paul says, he addresses it, we live in the world. We live in a broken world where people are going to hurt you, sometimes on purpose and sometimes on accident. But we cannot escape the fact that people are going to offend us. People are going to hurt us. People are going to do things that cause confrontation. But Paul then says, but we don't wage war as the world does. So we're in the world and we get hurt and we get impacted by things, but we don't retaliate the way that the world retaliates. The way the world works is it says, if you're nice to me, I'll be nice to you. But if you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. And not just hurt you, I'm going to hurt you worse than you hurt me. But the way of Jesus says, you hurt me, I'm going to turn my other cheek. The way of Jesus says, you hurt me, I'm going to find a way to forgive you. The way of Jesus says, I need to address this issue and the problem, but I love you, and I want to fix what's really going on. When we wage war, when we have a conflict, when we deal with someone, it's actually, the goal is to make the relationship better. Not just to address them and how bad they are and just to hurl things back at them and to hurt them the way that you've been hurt. If you're a Christian in the relationship, the goal of confrontation is reconciliation. The goal of confrontation is to restore your relationship, to be okay. And you've got to move as a Christian. You've got to manage your anger by moving from confrontation to communication. You got to move. You got to control your anger by moving from confrontation to communication. Well, what does that mean? Well, if you're confronting someone, you're coming at them with anger and you're calling them out, you're telling them what's wrong with them, you're pointing out how they've hurt you, you're starting with the word you. Let me tell you what you did. You hurt me. You didn't meet this deadline. You did this. You offended me. You. A confrontation is anger where you are addressing someone else. A conversation is where you bring them into your pain. And a conversation doesn't start with you, it starts with I. In a healthy conversation, when there's a confrontation, you sit someone down and you say, hey, I need to talk to you about something. In this relationship, I have felt like my needs weren't being met. In this relationship, I have felt offended. Maybe there's a chance you didn't mean to do this, but I'm just letting you know a little bit of who I am, that I have been hurt in this relationship. And then you get specific. I have been hurt because when you did this, maybe you didn't mean to do it, but when you did this, this is how it made me feel. And you're opening up your chest and letting them see your heart, and you're bringing them into the conversation to say, hey, I'm not trying to throw haymakers at you. I'm not trying to accuse you. I'm not trying to beat you down. I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here because there's something going on that's creating distance between us, and I want to fix that. So it's a conversation. It's not confrontation. And so often when it comes to relationships, we tend to fight in relationships, but we need to learn to fight for relationships. And what's the difference? Well, when you fight in a relationship, it's about how they've wronged you, how they haven't met your needs, how they're not doing what you want to do, how they're not living how you want them to live, how they're not bringing to the table what you think they should bring to the table. That's a confrontation, and a confrontation leads you to fight in the relationship. The problem is when you fight in a relationship, someone wins and someone loses. And if you've knocked out a friend of yours, a spouse, a kid, a coworker, and you've knocked them out, you haven't won. You've caused a division in the relationship. As opposed to when you fight for the relationship, you come to them and say, hey, this is awkward, this is hard, but I love you so much, I want to fix what's going on. I want to bring you into this. Can we just talk about this? Can we talk about, like, maybe it's me, maybe I'm just being sensitive, but there's something going on, and I love you so much, I'm going to fight for this. I love you so much, I'm willing to do anything it takes, even if it means we've got to talk about an awkward situation. I love you so much that I'm going to bring this up and talk about it. So often in relationships, we fight in the relationship, but we need to learn to fight for the relationship. So Paul goes on to say in 2 Corinthians 10:4, he says, the weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. Now, at this point in the text, I get a little frustrated with Paul. Because Paul is brilliant. Like, he is a next-level thinker. He is on a whole other page when it comes to God. He opens up so much insight to relationships with humans and with God. And so often, he is incredibly practical, and he just tells us what to do. But we get to this part in the conversation, and he says, I'm going to come to this confrontation, and I'm not going to wage war like they do. I'm not going to wage war like the world does. I'm going to wage war with a divine war. Specifically, he says, the weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. And what I want to know is, what are those weapons? What are we fighting with, Paul? Give me a list. Like, if I went to a store to find a weapon, I wouldn't just say, give me the God weapons. Like, they would need to know specifically, what am I aiming for? What does that mean? And Paul doesn't give us the list. And I don't know why. I won't know this until one day when I get to meet him in heaven. I don't know what this list is. But what I know is that if this was the only letter we had, if the rest of Paul's letters weren't included in the Bible, if this was all we had about this confrontation, Paul is entrusting us to wrestle with this and figure out what he's talking about. So the point that Paul is making is there are weapons that the world uses that are natural. They're just weapons that when you get offended, it's just your natural instinct. It's just the way you deal with drama. It's natural to you. But if you're a Christian, you're called to a higher standard. And what the weapons you are to use, that we need to pray about that. We need to think about that. But at the end of the day, if you go into a confrontation and it doesn't bring the person you're confronting closer to God, you're not using the right weapons. Because Paul says the weapons that we use, they're divine. What does that mean? The weapons are of God. And I don't know the specifics of the weapons that Paul wants us to use, but I can figure out the weapons of the world. And the reason I can figure out the weapons of the world is because they're just natural. That I just know that when I get into arguments or confrontations, there's just a natural way for me to handle these things. And my natural way is not healthy. And if you've been in confrontations, you have some unfair fighting tactics. There's some things that you do that are the ways of the world. That when you get into a conflict, instead of making the situation better, you make it worse by just responding by the natural way that you handle confrontation. There are some unfair fighting tactics that we use. And these, in my opinion, would fit what Paul is talking about when he says the weapons of the world. These are the weapons that the world uses. It's things like this, name calling. That when you get in a confrontation and you start to feel angry, you start calling the person names. You say things to them. Well, I'm feeling bad about this, so let me tell you about you. You are so blank. And it's an unfair fighting tactic. And often, if you're not careful, you'll end up saying things to the people that you love that you would never say to a complete stranger. You can say some of the most hurtful things to the people that you say you love the most. It's an unfair fighting tactic of name calling. Another unfair fighting tactic is bringing up the past. Someone comes to you to confront and say, hey, I have an issue, I want to talk about this. And instead of saying, let me hear this, let me have a conversation, you say, well, let me tell you what you did last week. I haven't even brought that up yet. Well, remember what you did 6 years ago? I still remember what you did 6 years ago. Let me bring that up. And instead of dealing with the issue at hand, you bring up the past. Well, that's an unfair fighting tactic. That is, if you're in a boxing match, that would be biting or kicking. That is unfair. The rules of a fight, see, there are certain things that you can do and certain things that you cannot do. And when you go to name-calling or bringing up the past, you are fighting unfair. Another unfair fighting tactic is raising your voice or intimidation. Now, maybe you are like me, and I don't feel like I ever yell. I don't feel like I ever lose my cool. But when I start to get frustrated, I tell my wife, I'm not yelling, I'm just really passionate. The problem is that in your relationship, it's not about how you feel like you're handling it. It's about how you are communicating your feelings to someone else. And if they feel threatened because you've raised your voice, you are using an unfair fighting tactic. Because as soon as you get passionate and you raise your voice, it's communicating to them, this isn't a safe place for us to talk about this issue. And we need to have this confrontation, but they're starting to yell, they're starting to get really mad, so I'm just going to get quiet and just kind of shut this down, and we're not going to talk about it because they're getting ticked off. Another unfair fighting tactic is the silent treatment. The silent treatment is one of the most passive-aggressive ways to get back at someone. The silent treatment says, I don't want to make a fool of myself by calling them names, and I don't want to pick on them, and I don't want to be mean, so the way that I will hurt them is simply by not saying anything. And if you were to see the silent treatment by someone else, you would laugh. You would make fun of them. But when it's us, it just feels natural. Like the silent treatment, it goes like this. Someone hurts you, and they can tell something's going on. They don't know what's going on. So they come to you and say, hey, is everything okay? I kind of feel like something may be off. And your response is, nope. Okay, are you sure? Because I kind of feel like you're mad at me. Like, Is everything okay? Yep. All right, well, we were laughing and having a good time, but like now you're really short with these answers. I'm not trying to nag you. I'm not trying to make you mad, but I just feel like there's distance. Are you sure you're okay? Yep, I'm just tired. Liar. You're not tired. You got 8 hours of sleep and you're jacked up on coffee. What are you doing? Well, you're afraid to confront the issue. And so because at some point in your life, you've had a bad dealing of confrontation, instead of letting someone know what's going on, you've said to yourself, it would be better just to lie to them and tell them that nothing is wrong. And if you're a person who avoids confrontation, you need to be honest. And maybe that means you need to learn the rule of the timeout. The rule of the timeout simply says, hey, yes, there is something wrong. I don't want to lie to you. You're asking me if there's something wrong. There is something wrong. But I need some time to process this. So would you give me 10, 15 minutes just to process this? And I promise I'll come to you and I'll talk to you about it. But I love you so much, I'm not going to lie to you and pretend like there's nothing wrong, because there is something. There's something going on inside of me. So just give me some time. It's an unfair fighting tactic. Another one is crying, using emotions to get your way. Now, some of us are more emotional than others. And this doesn't mean that you can't cry in a relationship. But some of you, if you're honest with yourself, you know that as soon as someone confronts you, you're just going to cry to get your way. And especially if you're married to a guy, you know the power of crying. I don't know a guy out there that when a girl he loves starts to cry, keeps pushing in on the argument. Like, every guy I know, when a woman starts to cry, they're just like, oh, it's my fault, I'm sorry, whatever you need. You went $1,000 over our budget, but here's some more money if that'll make you stop crying. Here's some shoes. Here's a credit card. Like, I'm sorry. I'll take the blame. It was my fault. And some of you know that issues don't get solved because you resort to crying, using emotions to manipulate the other person. And for you, you may need to take a time out and say, hey, I'm just emotional. This is hard for me to hear. I'm hearing your truth. But because I care about you and I want to communicate, give me a few minutes to just kind of calm down, and then we can talk about it. Another unfair fighting tactic is overgeneralizing. Overgeneralizing is saying things like always or never. Yesterday, I got to spend a lot of time with my kids from the morning throughout the afternoon. And if you ever have two kids around each other for a good amount of time, they're going to end up bickering. They're going to end up not getting along. And after hours of being together, my son started to pick on and bother my daughter. And they were in the back seat of the van, so I couldn't really see them. And my daughter tells me, and because I'm not afraid to confront my kids, because they're smaller than me, I confronted the issue. And I said, Hayden, you can't do that to your sister. You need to stop. I don't want to hear about this again. If you do that again, you will be in trouble. These are the rules that we set. Do not do this. Do you understand? He said, yes, sir. As soon as he said, yes, sir, my daughter then chirps in and says, Hayden always does that. And I said, whoa, wait a second, Miss Thing. In our family, we do not use the word always. Now, this was a new rule. I had not I was coming up with this on the spot, but I was very stern. I said, listen, Reese, we do not use the word always in our family. And my son gets very serious, and his eyes get kind of big, and he says, Dad, is always a bad word? Yes, son, it is. When it comes to a relationship, when it comes to a fight, to a confrontation, always and never are bad words, because they escalate things, and they're not true. When you come to someone and you're mad and you say, you always forget to take out the trash. You never remember the anniversary. You always do this. You are adding fuel to the flames. And you've got to take a step back and say, that's not fair. The truth is, sometimes they remember to take out the trash. Sometimes they remember what they're supposed to do. Sometimes they're a good person. They just, in this instance, they've made a mistake. Don't overgeneralize and make the situation worse. It's an unfair fighting tactic. Another one is sarcasm. You guys don't know anything about sarcasm, do you? No. Another one is to play the martyr. Playing the martyr is one of the most unfair fighting tactics. Playing the martyr says when someone addresses a conflict and says, hey, I have an issue, you just pour out, well, it's not my fault. My mom didn't love me, and my dad didn't make it to my basketball games, and I had a bad day today, and I lost $5 playing the lottery, and my nose is runny, and just woe is me. My life is awful. It's not my fault. Everyone's picking on me. No one likes me. I'm just going to go eat some worms. And instead of dealing with the issue at hand, you become the martyr. And that is very unfair, because now all of a sudden you can't deal with the one issue that they've brought up. You're now pouring on a bunch of things to cause them to feel sorry for you. It's an unfair fighting tactic, and it's the way of the world. And at the end of the day, our anger points us back to what is most important to us. Our anger points us back to what's most important to us. And in your relationships, when you get angry with someone, it points back to what is most important, this relationship or me being right? And when you get angry with another human being, you need to ask yourself, am I willing to fight for this relationship, or am I going to fight in this relationship? I'm angry, there's an issue, but am I going to allow my anger to cause a division, or am I going to work through this? Am I going to allow myself to talk about the issue, or am I going to go into hiding and repress these feelings? Am I going to go seek a professional counselor, or am I going to pretend that my life is perfect and keep everything in-house? Your anger points back to what is most important to you. And if the person that you're angry with is important, then you will fight for the relationship. At the end of the day, we're going to fight about a lot of things, but the only thing, in my opinion, that is worth fighting for is love. Love alone is worth the fight. And in a relationship, if you look to Jesus, when Jesus was hanging on the cross, there was a group of people who didn't get him, a group of people who were upset with him, a group of people who were mad at him, and he didn't even do anything wrong. And he had every right to look at them and say, they are so wrong. Look what they did to me. They are so evil. They are so bad. But instead, he looked out with empathy and pity, and he said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing. And the truth of the matter is sometimes people will hurt you, but they have a small picture of the world. They don't know what they're doing. Maybe they're hurting you because they're hurt themselves. Or maybe they're hurting you because you're hurt. You've never expressed your emotions and your feelings and how it makes you feel. But as a Christian, we have to choose. Are we going to fight like the world fights and just, if you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you worse? Or are we going to take a step back and say, yeah, we're going to have this fight, but we're going to do it in a way that's honoring to God? We're going to express our issues. We're going to express the concerns that we have and the hurt that we have. But at the end of this, when we confront this issue, we're going to be better friends. We're going to be better employees. We're going to be better as husband and wife. Paul concludes this section in 2 Corinthians 10:5 by saying, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. At the end of the day, there are going to be thoughts in your head that cause a rift in the relationship. There are going to be some tensions, and when you have a tension, when someone hurts you, your brain's going to go all sorts of places, and you're going to create all these scenarios and all these stories, and if you're not careful, you'll start saying, well, they did that on purpose, and they meant to hurt me, and they always do that, or they never do that. You're going to create this scenario, and what does Paul say? We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. Anything that is not honoring to God, we're going to put it away. Anything. And we're going to take captive every thought and make it obedient to Jesus. The truth of the matter is, if you're married, your spouse loves you. So fight for that relationship. And maybe they're hurting you and they don't even mean to. Maybe they're hurting you and you have an unhealthy expectation. Maybe they're hurting you and it's simply because they're hurting themselves. You got to fight for that relationship, not in that relationship. And if you have a friendship where at one point in your life you're like, we're best friends, but now you can't agree on it, and now the relationship's starting to spread, you've got to say, hey, I love you so much, I'm going to fight for this thing. Whatever we need, we'll go see a counselor, we'll go ask an opinion, we're going to figure this out. Because I love you so much, I'm not going to allow this rift, this frustration, this anger to cause us separation. Are you going to fight in your relationships or for your relationship? And when you start feeling your anger rise, you've got to take those thoughts captive. Because those thoughts are going to cause you to have a rift, a separation, to get angry, and then to avoid the confrontation. But as a Christian, we're called to a higher standard. So this is our application for the day. It's simply this. Manage your anger by moving from confrontation to communication. Manage your anger by moving from confrontation to communication. This week, when you get angry at your spouse, when you get angry at your friends, employees, your boss, whoever it is, when you get angry, instead of pushing them away, pull them in and have a conversation. Not a confrontation, a conversation. Talk to them. Set up some boundaries, guidelines. Let them know that you care about them, but that there's some tension going on. God's calling us as Christians to have healthy relationships that point people ultimately back to Him. Will you pray with me? God, thank you for your love for us, and thank you that you're so patient with us. So often it's so easy to break up and to mess up our own relationships. And God, we just ask right now in Jesus' name that you would help us to be people that fight for love, that we would fight for relationships, for healthy relationships. God, I just ask in Jesus' name right now that you would give Some of us that are holding on to bitterness and anger, that God, you would just give us the grace and forgiveness we need. God, as there is a spiritual enemy that's trying to separate us from our best friends and from our family, God, would you help us to fight for those relationships? Would you help us to say sorry when we need to say sorry? God, right now, would you just give someone the courage to pick up the phone and to call someone that there's been distance because they've hurt them? Would you just help mend the relationship? Would you help us to be honest with one another? God, would you give us what we need to have healthy relationships that point people back to you? In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.